Wouldn't you love to get paid for doing what you love to do? If you're ready to move on to what's next, join us for Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson. Our uplifting live talk show on Saturday mornings from 10 to noon will have you circling back, not running in circles, to pull your experience forward in new ways. Advance your career, plus help others with theirs. Join us Saturdays, 10 to noon, right here on 104.1 The Truth, for pragmatic advice and unconventional wisdom. Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson, where your path is created by walking on it. Well, again, thank you, everyone, for sticking with us. This has been our 300th show on Circles of Change, and it's only befitting that I would get the opportunity to spotlight and partner with someone in the academic community who's all about change herself, and that's Anita McGahan from the University of Toronto. How are you this morning, Anita?
Thanks so much for involving me in the show. I'm doing great. How are you?
I just couldn't be better. It's kind of a rite of passage is going on this time of year. As I mentioned, you know, my son's going off to college. Here I'm speaking to someone yourself who's spent in time in academia as well as elsewhere, but let me give a brief introduction. Anita is Associate Dean of Research. She's PhD Director, Professor, and the Rotman Chair in Management at the Rotman School of Management at the University of Toronto. She's a cross-appointed as well to the Monk School of Global Affairs. She's a Senior Associate at the Institute for Strategy and Competitiveness at Harvard University, which is her alma mater, and also she's Chief Economist at the Massachusetts General Hospital Division for Global Health and Human Rights. So, in other words, a very full plate. Anita has publishing credits. They include two books, over 100 articles, case studies, notes, and on the competitive advantage, industry evolution, and financial performance. And her current research emphasizes entrepreneurship in the public interest and innovative collaboration between public and private organizations. Anita is also pursuing a longstanding passion in the inception of new industries, particularly in global health. Might mention that she continues to make it her life coast to coast and globe to globe in both academic tours of her career. She was a student at Northwestern University and then on to Harvard. In addition to having worked, by the way, in consulting for McKinsey and Company and also Morgan Stanley. While I said she's based in Toronto at this point, she has been a resident scholar, a professor, a head of director, curriculum advisor, and so on at schools such as Boston University, Stanford, the London School of Business, the Australian Graduate School of Management, and the Division of Social Medicine at the Harvard Business School. So broad work, broad perspectives, as add in time she gives to charities, scientific associations, and several companies as a member of their board. So what caught my eye most recently, really, to include Anita in this particular show is actually her passion around reform. So this isn't just transformation, but true reform in the core curriculum of business schools. And I must say that's got to be well informed, Anita, by all the other tours you've enjoyed. So take us on that path. I mean, you've always been one to talk about strategy in business, in social settings and so on, but to turn that knowledge and process in on the very institutions you're part of, that must be an interesting period of reflection.
Yes, thank you for that kind introduction and for the introduction to this topic, which, you know, I am so passionate about. So I began my career as a business school professor some 20 years ago, a little over 20 years ago, at the Harvard Business School, which was just a fantastic place to get started. And I threw myself with real passion into the core strategy curriculum and the agenda, the intellectual agenda and research there, which emphasized issues such as structures of industry, industry change, the development of corporate capabilities, and so on, really all driven by an interest in improving the financial performance of companies. And, my belief then, and it's a belief that I continue to hold today, is that the private sector and companies in particular are places of great creativity where, you know, if we can unleash private entrepreneurship, unleash the kind of decentralized testing of ideas and so on that can occur in the business sector, that we can make tremendous productivity advancements and great progress that benefits everybody across society. Mm-hmm. What's happened to me, though, over the last, I'd say maybe the last 5-7 years or so, is that I've come to realize that the culture of business schools and the way that we teach these ideas hasn't always emphasized, the social contract that's led to the formation of the company in the first place, which is that we create prosperity, really broad-based prosperity that benefits everybody. And, you know, in light of all this work that I've been doing in global health that you just mentioned, that you were very generously mentioning in your remarks to introduce this session. In light of my exposure to the challenges of really improving health, especially the health of the poor, I've become, I wouldn't say regretful, but I've certainly become aware of the sort of untapped opportunities in my early career for helping our students, and particularly our MBA candidates, appreciate the significance of the advantages that they have and of the resources at our disposal in places like Canada and the United States for pursuing business ideas. And that's led me to reflect on how I want to contribute now, which is really help our students think of themselves less as business people and more as managers, maybe thinking of them of taking a tour in their careers through not just the private sector, but also the public sector, working effectively in partnership across the public-private boundary, and really exploring what I now see as the greatest opportunities, certainly for my lifetime, but also even more extensively in our students' lifetimes, for actually creating new kinds of value in the public interest.
Well, and in fact, it's not just a nice to do, it's a got to do, isn't it, Anita? Because in the meantime, the tremendous amount of erosion that's happening more in the public sector, or not keeping pace with the demands of global needs, it's calling for that intellectual know-how and powerhouse, some of our best and brightest, to roll up their sleeves and get in there and do something about it, not just talk about it.
Yeah, and I agree entirely. In fact, I just came prior to this interview from a meeting with a former student of mine who's gone on to work in the public sector, and we were talking about how difficult it is in an environment that's constrained by, you know, election cycles and public services, you know, really following the political process, how hard it is to do things like improve health, to advance energy conservation, to innovate in alternative energy, the areas of alternative energy and healthcare that are just imperative. Here in Ontario, I may get these numbers a little bit wrong, but more or less, I think we're spending something like 46% of the provincial government budget on healthcare delivery, and that's projected to go up, especially over the next few years as federal grants to the province expire. You know, if we are going to spend something like 75% of the provincial budget on healthcare by the time I hit retirement some 20 years from now, we're going to have to crowd out essential services like, you know, policing and fire and so on. That it's just not tenable for us to allow healthcare expenditures to increase. We have to both improve quality and lower cost at the same time. That requires technological breakthroughs. It requires true innovation and governance and so on. And that's going to require a partnership between public and private sector organizations. My young colleague who I was meeting with earlier today in the public sector, he can't do it from his vantage point. We can't do it in the private sector if we keep our focus on short-term profitability. We have to collaborate to innovate together over the long run.
And there you go. You just hit on the point, though, that is often the disincentive to allow that collaboration to happen, and that is a different incentive system. That in the private sector, if we're looking at quarter after quarter or at minimum, you know, year over year profits, that the time horizon for dealing with these snarly, messy social challenges don't see the payback come that quickly.
So this gets us back to your original question, which I want to make sure I answer directly, which is what we can do in universities. You know, in universities, we have that kind of long horizon, and we should be doing research. Mm-hmm. And engaging in, you know, the generation of ideas that can help solve these problems. We should be much more applied. We've got to be much more interdisciplinary. We're very fortunate here at the University of Toronto to be in a university that values this kind of collaboration and that has a culture that will support it. So, you know, the opportunity for us is to train students, have them working in research, really doing fantastic, engaged in fantastic educational programs with up-to-date curriculum that it can inform new ideas about what we can do to innovate at this boundary between public and private sector entrepreneurship, and you know, come up with better solutions that can, you know, crack some of the problems that we've been discussing.
And what are your area of research right now that would demonstrate this idea you're talking about?
If we have time, let me just give you one example on the research side and another on the teaching side that might be, you know, just to give you a feel for what we're trying to do. And I also should say I'm very inspired by the work of my colleagues as well. I'm certainly not the only scholar here at the Rotman School who's doing research in this area, but let me just give you a couple quick examples. So I'm involved in a project with a professor at the University of Toronto Medical School called O'Neill Bhattacharya. He's a young assistant professor. I met him through some friends at the Harvard Medical School. And we both arrived here in Toronto at the same time in 2007. And back then, we started a project in which his students at that time, who were taking a course at the School of Public Health, and my MBA students worked together to profile innovative health delivery organizations in the private sector, in particularly in poor countries. So, for example, we profiled a really interesting dentistry program in Brazil called Dentista do Bem that actually subsidizes dental care to high school students who otherwise might not pursue dentistry, and, you know, get them on a lifelong path of having a relationship with a dentist and then having really strong dental health care from the beginning of their lives, and, you know, benefits everybody because people who have good dental care tend to more easily get jobs. They have good overall health over their lifetimes. Benefits the government, benefits them personally, and of course benefits the dentist who otherwise might not have access to a young group of new patients. So that's the kind of work we're trying to do. So you got a medical school professor, a business school professor, students across public health and business working on healthcare delivery, innovative models that we ought to have here in Canada, I think, as well as profiling this organization in Brazil. O'Neill and I are now engaging in yet another project, now in collaboration with another professor here called Will Mitchell, who's just really a leading internationally renowned scholar in medical device, in the area of medical device management and innovation. We're looking now at how to measure effective social entrepreneurship efforts, and we've involved students again in our projects. So that's an example on the research side, trying to come up with something practical, some practical ideas about how to really measure what constitutes quality healthcare delivery at a decent cost around the world, and trying to come up with some innovations that could benefit.
And what you're doing, Canada, of course, is then at the same time giving birth to a new language that others can jump on and help dissolve some of these boundaries that otherwise typically fly up and get in our way.
That's the goal.
Yes.
So the other example I was just going to give you is I just was fortunate to spend some time earlier this summer in Kenya involved in a course that was offered through Harvard to undergraduates on improving the health of the poor there through partnership with NGOs. We were trying to teach these students to measure their impact on the community in a broad way right from the very beginning so that they could pull the plug on projects that were actually doing more harm than good.
Good, okay, right. Interesting. And the receptivity of the students in this generation, I'll say, because you've been a professor, as you said, for quite a few years, are the seeds already planted there in the eyes of the youth that you've encountering now in these days in academia?
It's inspiring. You know, it's very, it's not hard to get students interested in these topics. What we really have to do to follow through with them is to figure out a way that they can, you know, that they can be responsible in terms of their own obligations to their families and so on, who are putting them through these expensive university programs. And, you know, they want to do it. They want to be engaged. And our challenge is figuring out how to support them in finding jobs and really building great lives, that reflect these interests.
That's right. Anita, your own personal wake-up call that you said kind of 5 years ago, do you feel this was something that snuck upon you, Or was it one specific episode or a book or an encounter with someone that prompted that awareness in your thinking?
Sure. So I've always been interested in global health and worked in the health sector throughout my career. What happened was about 5 or 7 years ago, when I was at Boston University, I was thinking about the next chapter of my development, and I ran into an old friend and now a co-author called Paul Farmer, who's a global health physician, on an airplane. We were, we might have been the only two people on this airplane. It was a flight from New York to Boston. And I turned to Paul and I said, gee whiz, you know, I think I wish I had become a doctor. And he said to me, and he's, of course, a physician, he said to me, Anita, what are you talking about? All my problems are management problems. And I realized that, you know, there was a real opportunity for me to throw myself into thinking about these big, intractable, difficult problems of our time, problems like, such as inequality, disease, and problems of such as coming up with alternative energy, to throw myself into them as a management scholar and think of them as management problems as well as medical and engineering and scientific problems.
And isn't that interesting? A chance encounter on an airplane, and something hits you like that, and lo and behold, you now walk off the plane a different person.
Yeah, I mean, I would say I was very fortunate in that, you know, in some ways I was the same. The decision that I made, the thing that transformed me, was just a readiness to step up into what I knew to be true.
There you go. Yeah, that's right. Well, if you were entering college right now or an MBA program today like you did X number of years ago, do you have a sense of what you'd do differently when you went to Harvard in the mid-'80s?
Yeah, I think when I was at Harvard in the mid-'80s in the MBA program, I both really committed myself to, you know, the curriculum of the MBA program, and also, you know, in some ways was an advocate for change even then. What I didn't do that I wish I had done or I would do now is cross register and take courses in other parts of the university. I wish I had more faith in the people around me and the faculty of the school at the time to think broadly as thought partners about some of the, you know, questions that were coming up even then about the sustainability, for example, of a Wall Street career, or the fact that a lot of people who are 5 and 10 years ahead of me were even then opting out of what seemed to be a crazy sort of culture of chasing deals that couldn't be sustained. So I guess I wish I had opened up the conversations earlier that we're having now.
Yeah, other than who knows, you wouldn't have known that there wasn't something already brewing for all these years that then allowed you to have that conversation on the airplane. It might have been there in different ways to arm you. I know the other piece of the comments I've read about you and heard you speak about, of course, is a strong belief in a liberal arts background, too.
Oh,
that
absolutely.
It isn't just the analytical or the scientific or an undergraduate in business that empowers people to take these later steps that are so important to bridging that gap.
That's right. So just to be clear, I was really lucky to get an undergraduate degree at Northwestern University in humanities, which is an interdisciplinary degree. I had a fantastic mentor in Jane Mansbridge, who really believed in me. And so there wouldn't be too much I would change about that undergraduate education. Mm-hmm. What I was referring to in my remarks about cross-registering and so on was about my MBA.
Right. And I think we get a sense of that today, even when we look upon those of us that have had responsibility of grooming future leaders of organizations, that we push them and encourage them to do things in the community, that we value them taking cross-disciplinary moves within companies. I mean, not all, but I think that move afoot is so important to be able to walk in other people's shoes.
That's right. And I would say that's a critical facet of this, you know, doing some sort of exchange or interdisciplinary work. And then, of course, also going deep. And for me, the way to become deep and to really develop expertise in an area, it very much involved working with a mentor. I mentioned Jane Mansbridge, my undergraduate mentor, with whom I wrote a thesis, and she remains a friend today. I was very fortunate there. Also, Richard Kays, my thesis supervisor, when I was in the PhD program at Harvard, really took me under his wing personally, looked after me, encouraged me to develop my interests and to pursue a kind of a depth of understanding in a particular area. So this would be it's difficult, especially now, to acquire the kind of depth that's required, you know, that you need as a young person to land a job, to be an expert in an area, and then also to have this breadth.
You think it's more difficult today because there's so many more options or demands on the students?
That's right, and also the level of expertise you need to really qualify as a specialist is even greater. So the key is to cross-register, for example, but not to only to broaden yourself, also to deepen your knowledge in an area.
Yeah, well put. Well, I think the other thing, of course, I mentioned in my introduction of you is that you've had wonderful opportunities to contribute to organizations around the globe. And here you are as well, having been based within the American higher ed system, and now you're going into the Canadian one. So all of those really have had to have opened your perspectives, although some might say, you know, you couldn't hold a steady job.
Yeah, no, that's it's true. I've been here at the University of Toronto for 5 years. You know, the universities I've been involved with have been phenomenal. It's great you express it as opportunity. I have been so fortunate in my life, having grown up in New York City and even just being born in North America in the 20th century, you're conferred with such amazing advantages over people around the world. I have been very lucky.
I think the other side, too, if I recall the first time that we met, Anita, I had an opportunity to hear about your research and your field work in Africa, in developing countries, in places, and you've got firsthand touchstones to bring those experiences very viscerally to life in your own mind.
I was talking with a student the other day, last weekend actually, who I ran into on the sidewalk, and we took a walk together, and I was, you know, he was saying how overwhelmed he is as a young person trying to start a business and get himself off the ground. It's overwhelming to try to hold in your mind at the same time the tasks of actually being successful as an entrepreneur and the implications of the actions that you take for people around the world, especially for poor people, which are, as you know, incredibly important to the work that I do, and trying to hold that all together. One amazing sort of facet of my time here in Toronto is to do this work in collaboration with close friends. It makes holding it all together and not being overwhelmed possible, the fact that I'm working with such great colleagues and students.
And then, of course, as a friendships and relationships you've built over your lifetime that just continue to circle back and probably inform you every step of the way or pull you in new directions at the same time. Well, Anita McGahan, thank you so much for joining us here on Circles of Change. Our interested listeners can visit the University of Toronto's website and tap in further to her wonderful work on changing academia and academic research, as well as touching some really important topics that touch the world. Thanks so much, Anita.
Thank you.
You bet. Change is chaotic. That is, unless you embrace it, going places you hadn't dreamed were possible. The Larson Group, Architects of Change, is a leadership consulting, executive coaching, and career transition firm. We help individuals make the most of their current employment situation or to step forward confidently into a career transition. Contact us at thelarsongroup.com or toll free 1-877-544-2580. The Larson Group, Architects of Change, helping others unleash potential through transformational change. 1-877-544-2580.